Fan Morning Show, Sports F5 Night of the Fan, J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy. Saturday night, the air is getting hot, is the way they should start for the
Big day for Saturdays. We got Jeff Saturday, we got Saturday night.
Yeah, we got the Saturday night song. We got the Leafs next game on Saturday. We got Bills are Saturday or Sunday?
Sunday night.
Bills are Sunday nighter. Bills got the prime slot.
They sure did.
Okay. That's the spot, eh? Bills. All right. So fine. Saturday. Still, NFL football. No Steelers.
Saturday. Also known as Grandpa Friday. If we're doing Baby Friday today, regular Friday, and then Grandpa Friday.
No, that's Father. That's Father Friday. Grandpa Friday is Sunday.
Please. Yeah. Friday is my dad. Mr. Friday is my dad. Just call me Friday.
I love our next guest, but his freedom irks me when I have no freedom, because he loves pointing it out. He loves rubbing it in my face. He loves when the Leafs are in a tire fire, and he loves when Ontario can't do things. This is Colby Armstrong, former NHL forward, current sports analyst. What's up, bro?
Fair.
What's up? Yeah, I know it's not fair. Guess what? Life's not fair, okay, buddy? That's the way it is. I need something.
Yeah. Well, I'll give it to you.
Thanks, man. Especially when I see your Instagram, like they're like, "Hey, Colby, we figured out that one of your new roles is to just be Cabby's wingman in sick places and just go down and booze and golf." And
I like that job. Yeah. Like,
where was the application for that job?
I would love
job?
To apply.
Yeah, exactly. Other people would like the shot.
I got a pretty good little gig going. It's actually awesome. Yeah, that was. Yeah, my Instagram's popping lately, hey?
It really is.
Yeah, we've got you muted. We can't handle it.
Yeah, it is.
I'm unbelievable.
Except for you can't beat Cabby at Topgolf. You played in the show. Like, your whole life should have been golf, and you can't even beat him at Topgolf.
I know.
That's tough. That's a tough look for NHL in general.
I
wondered if the Alumni Association reached out to you and was like, "Hey, man, we can't have this. You got to take this down."
Revoking your status.
Yeah, seriously. I know. Well, you know what the game was? I wanted to play, like, target. You had to hit the right target. Mm. But, like, you still get points if you put it in the wrong target. So that's how Cabby cleaned up. He just cleaned up on points. He just was just knocking it out there and finding a way. So I got to give it to him. I mean, I got to eat that one. I just got to eat that one. That one sucks. It's going to live forever. That's forever out there. Like, hat tip to Cabby, though. Hat tip to Cabby. And you know what? He was a gracious winner. He hardly bugged me about that at all.
Yeah, that's so good. I love that it's out there forever. Like,
I know. Oh, my God.
2020, that's going to be something. Like, you be careful with, you know, the way you treat me, because otherwise I'll be showing Cruz those clips someday.
Yeah. I was really rattled about it, actually, at the time. I was really upset.
I know you were. Hey, man, I know. Hey, listen, it's one of my favorite things about our friendship is you're a guy who can give it. You can take it. You'll chirp. You'll get into one. You'll have a lot of laughs, but you definitely are still a competitive guy. Like, you play in the NHL, you're a pro athlete, you have that side to you. And every once in a while, when it comes out, it's my favorite. You know, like when we tease you too much about Pyeongchang, when you see and you go, "Gosh, play in the NHL, right? That's a pretty good player." I was like, oh.
Hilarious.
Yeah, every once in a while you could get it. I could tell from that golf video that you were sour. That it was. I bet you had a pop after that or two. Just a little cool down zone where you had to relax and realize, like, hey, don't just fire away on Cabby here. Don't just tell Cabby to shut up after he's bragging about his win instead of for the video. Oh man, so good. Okay, so speaking of controlling yourself, do you think that Sheldon Keefe should have done that better? Yesterday he roasted his team, said they're soft and purposeless. You like that? It's January.
I know.
They got a track
line.
Record. But did you like using that at this time? Did he use the bullet in the right time?
Well, I think what a line, first of all. And, you know, watching that game last night, though, it was like he's not wrong. I don't think he's wrong. Like, you know, and I was talking to other people. Like, it's like, I think of the Leafs as a team that, like, look fun to play that way. It's like, it would be fun. Like, if you're a player, you can just go out there and dipsy doodle, hang on to pucks and, like, you know, try to make plays because it's, like, encouraged and, you know, okay. But then you see them against the Rangers, who just kind of, you know, chipped away, wore away, like, kind of banged and crashed a little bit themselves back into that game. And you could see, and this is like, he's right, though. He's right. Like, this is the whole thing with this team. And, like, playoffs and like first round of the playoffs, and are they going to be able to play that way? And you know, it's a message to his group that like, look, we're a good team, but like, we're not good if we're going to play this way, and we're not going to win meaningful, purposeful games if we're going to play like this. And you know, I think it was good. I think it's a good message. I think they can handle it. And I think it's a good message to the group. If it wasn't on top of giving up a 3-1 lead to a game you had in perfect control, even when, you know, the Rangers started to push back, they still had the game in control. But it's just like that, I guess the one line that came up years is like the killer instinct, right? Like there's just that, you know, that purposeful play and understanding like what it's going to take to win that game. And, you know, Keith sent the message. Drop the bomb on him, which, you know, we've seen coaches do it over and over again, but I think it was warranted. I think it's needed. I think it's a message.
Colby, obviously you want to push those buttons at the right time if you're a coach. If you are on the opposite side of this, you're a team that's looking ahead at, you know, maybe a playoff series with the Leafs. Given their propensity to do this, if they don't get this figured out, how empowering is that if you're on the other side? Like if you're on that bench and you're in that room and you get down to the Leafs, how much of an extra confidence boost is there right now because they do keep blowing these games?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm looking at it like if we're playing them, like we know they're a dangerous team. We know they can score. Like that's one thing. Like even though that, you know, when the game was knotted up, you're thinking, okay, like regardless of, you know, playing style, they always got a chance just because they, you know, for the most part have guys that can put the puck in the net and create chances and make plays. So if I'm going against this team, I'm thinking that's their recipe, that they're always going to be dangerous. And I think also because of the way they play and because of their skill and style, I think teams really love, you know, giving it to them. I think they love beating the Leafs. I think they love beating this team, and they love beating them in a certain way. Like, what were the hits last night? And I know it's just like one stat, but they were like wickedly lopsided.
It was
like
31-12 or something.
Yeah, 31-12, exactly. And, you know, yeah, they didn't have the puck probably as much as the Leafs, but they were just way more engaged of a team philosophy and style and, you know, personnel to be able to, you know, provide a little bit of that. And you better believe that teams, when they play the Leafs, they think, okay, these guys are dangerous, but they also know we can push these guys around too.
Okay, so they've blown a couple 3-1 leads this month alone. How much of that is on the players, and how much of that is on the coaching, you know, the coaching methods and the way that the coach inspires the team, and how much of that is on goaltending? Like, give me some percentages, and what do you think, how that plays out?
Yeah, I think I saw like a stat on this, or not a stat, like a poll or something on social media, you know, pertaining to like the Oilers. And it was right. Like, are they a good team in a bad stretch? Are they this? And I would say they're, you know, in thinking about the Leafs, and I don't know percentages, but are they
that's a lot for you. You're not a big math guy.
Yeah, brutal math guy. And that's obvious. But it's a situation where I think obviously they're a good team. Like they're a real good team. Are they having trouble in certain aspects of their game? Yeah, I think probably. Is it like their strongest point in trying to figure that out? No, I don't think in like their makeup that it's easy for them to like, you know, figure it out. I think it's a little bit outside of like the comfort zone of their style of play and like their idea of like how they're going to play. So I think it's a little bit of both, honestly, Ailish. I think it's like, it's coaching. I think it's the idea of their game. I think it's the idea of how they're going to play. And I think it's a tough way for the, it's tough for them to like meld the two of them together just because of the personnel also. So, you know, I think that's why it was like so much on Richie, right? There's like, we look at Wayne Simmonds, we're like, okay, these guys, they went and got, you know, they went and got all these guys that they can provide this kind of, you know, other dimension to this team and to the game. And, you know, I think a lot of weight's on those guys' shoulders to kind of, you know, push through on in the depths and push through in kind of game shifting shifts and momentum changing shifts in a different way other than, you know, just puck possession and a little bit of, you know, hopeful, easy plays.
Yeah, I think so much of this just has to do with the pressure, right? And you talk about it, like how much is on their shoulders.
That's a thing too.
Yeah, but that's it, right? Is that these guys know every game, so they're at MSG, right? And like Reeves is feeding it to them, and you know the TNT panel is watching this, and that
DJ,
by the way, that
Pauly D's ripping it up in the booth.
Oh yeah,
that was sick. He just had the crowd pumping.
That was,
you know,
sweet.
What I gotta say, DJ Pauly D. How could you turn on the Devils like that, buddy? New Jersey has so few things, and you're going to turn on the Devils and you're going to go front run for the Rangers with your big gold chains? You've changed, yeah. DJ Pauly D. You've changed. Money changed you, man. You're a Devils guy. You're a Devils guy, Pauly. That was rude. That was a trail. But, yeah, just...
The bright lights of MSG, baby. You can get everybody.
It's too attractive. They draw everybody in. But just, okay, so Matthews is on this tear right now, right? And it ends last night with the soccer goal. But he's ripping it up. Marner looks great since he's come back. He really has. You could probably pick at nits a little bit with night in, night out. How much you should be getting from the Tavares line, and just, hey, are they forceful enough? Okay, well, whatever. They've been playing great, and Nylander's having his career year, and Tavares has been solid, and they're like Kerfoot's no longer getting hammered. Those guys are playing great night in, night out, and they've won like 6 of their last 10 games, right? They just went out west. They won these games. They've blown some leads, but the team is still winning. And if they win out, they win their next 4 games. They're first in a division with Tampa, Boston, and Florida. And all of us are here going, wow, your coach is calling you soft and purposeless, and your blue line sucks. You got a guy named Alex Biega out there who took 2 shifts and looked like he wanted to keel over and die. He was so out of shape. Your goalie now is starting to let in some soft ones. And I just wonder how much is too much for these guys and how much of it is just going to be now they're going to head into a February. Whenever they're in Toronto, they're not allowed to do anything. You can't even go out and have a drink with the guys. You can't even go have a beer to relax. You got to go right back to your place, your house. You're wearing a mask and everywhere you go. Like, I genuinely wonder how much the stress on the Stars right now is going to impact them over the next couple of months.
Yeah, I think it's all good points. By the way, Biega did also draw a penalty against Kreider for tripping, which is, you know, you could,
woo-hoo!
You know, that's like a little, I did something, I contributed. But I think everything you mentioned is big. And I also think, like people get looking at like the little picture, which is like, yay, we're winning games and stuff. But like, you know, keeps looking at like big picture stuff. Like,
sure.
He's looking towards playoffs. He's looking at those teams. He's looking at, you know, quality of play against a quality opponent like the Rangers are in their division and in the East, and going, okay, this is a measuring stick game for us. This is a big game for us, and this is the kind of opponent that we're going to face and the kind of adversity through a game that we're going to face. This is like the big picture look at like our group and whether it was good enough and how much it meant, I think, to Sheldon Keith to show his team could, you know, win games or be in a tough game like that and pull it out instead of, you know, falter down the stretch and completely blow that lead and blow the game apart later. But I think the bigger picture is the concern, and that's where he wants to, you know, get inside their head. But there's no doubt that, like, the other factors off ice in Toronto, masks and restrictions and all that, I think, you know, is in play. The pressure is another thing that's in play. And I think, obviously, you know, as Sheldon Keefe has to manage all of that and manage his players in all of that while looking at, you know, individual players play and then also looking at the team play and the big picture. So I think, you know, there's a lot going on. I think when you said, did he play the card too soon? You know, there's questions about that and, you know, his comments and ripping his team. But, you know, I think time will tell. I think we'll see if they respond and if there's a lesson learned in this game, in a big game, in the bright lights at MSG, Pauly D, turntables up. If, you know, they can kind of put that in the back of their mind and go, this was for a later date. Like, this lesson was for, you know, a bigger picture.
Hey, I like Keith, and I actually think the message was fine. Your team blows this many leads in a row. What do you expect him to do? He's not going to go up there and just be rainbows and sunshines. It's not who he is.
Yeah.
And, like, he's probably been containing a lot of frustration over this stretch, and he's been cool about it. And then last night he lost his cool a little bit. My only sort of pushback to his approach is what we were talking about, which is, hey, your Stars are going well. and ultimately shouldn't that matter the most? And now adding more pressure, more on their because like when you say you're soft and purposeless, nobody's thinking about the fourth line, right? No one's looking at the advanced metrics
well,
and saying, well,
I don't think he was calling out anybody individually.
No, he wasn't.
I think he was calling out his team play. So,
dude,
you're right. It's those guys are out of the picture, I think, and with the message, I think it's to the group. So, you know, in a way, I do think this, you know, the Stars may take the burden of some of it or the brunt of some of it, but you talk about, you know, individual play and how good it is. How about Soup Daddy? Soup Daddy's just lighting it up. And, you know, they got guys that are playing well and lines that are contributing and playing well and doing their job, but it's finding ways to win games as a team. And I think that's what he was trying to get at as a team.
Colby, you are interested in
awesome.
The Pittsburgh Penguins less. Yeah, awesome as well.
Awesome as well. Trying to
figure out how to set this up without being, you know, you're a Penguins fan.
For you.
Yeah. That deep pregnant pause. Yeah, you cover the Penguins. You've been pretty excited to see your guy Geno Malkin back. The Penguins are kind of quietly 7th in the league in points percentage. Maybe they're not a contender, but they're not far off from that status, at least in terms of the standings. Malkin's back. He's 35. Crosby's 34. Is there still a window here for this team?
I mean, I think there was question marks heading into the season, and with no Malkin and Crosby to start the year for an extended period of time, I think, you know, everyone was around here was kind of waiting to see what happened. And then obviously, you know, Ron Hextall and comes in and, you know, he's going to be looking at this picture and going, okay, where are we at? What's the real look of this team? Are we over? Are we done? And I think the team, to their credit, and Mike Sullivan's credit in preparation with a lot of moving parts, a lot of versatile parts, a lot of call-ups, a lot of guys playing all over the place, but this team has put themselves in a position where they not only weathered the storm, they performed really, really well and getting bodies back. It's still happening. Like, you know, Russ just got back to the lineup. He's missed a couple times for extended periods of time. Kapanen as well, and on down the list of top six, top nine guys. So, you know, they miss McGinn. They miss Zach Aston-Reese, who's on their checking kind of rock-solid line. That line's the one line that's, like, never been split up with Teddy Bluger in the middle. So, excuse me. Yeah, it's been a – I think it's been good for obviously Hextall to see this and go, okay, I think we've got something. I think this team has put Hextall in a position, you know, heading, and lots can happen to the trade deadline, but in a position where they could look at like, yeah, I think we've got another real quality shot at this with the way our team's been playing. And they just ripped off 10 game winning streak about a week ago, you know, into an extended road trip as well. That was a bear of a road trip for them out west and continued into Vegas, and they just will return home here tonight, so against Ottawa. But it's this the team looks good. They're playing real good hockey, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them jockeying for position to try to, you know, lead this division again like they did last year. It's crazy to see with, you know, the people that they've lost to see where they're at. And honestly, it's amazing to watch them play. And like this Penguins team, though, it's like when you think that they're done, like there's been so many nights I'm like, there's no way they're winning this game. And like they'll come out and like win like 8-2, and I'm like, what is going on? How are they doing this? But a dialed in, completely focused team, and a team I think that understands how to win games, more importantly, and that's what they've been able to do: get points and win games.
Yeah, you just better be cheering for the Leafs on Saturday night because you need them to bury the Islanders, because Islanders get in and face them, and you're dead. That's it. That's the Achilles heel. Islanders
that's the worst
in the playoffs.
For everyone.
Yeah, and then you're good. Yeah, exactly. For aesthetics, every hockey fan should be cheering against the Islanders. Like, it's just the way it goes. Okay, so I got two quick ones for you. How stoked do you think the Pissy Boys were, the Edmonton Oilers, that the Leafs ended up having quotes like that last night, and they took the NHL media eye off their backs for like 1 minute?
Oh, yeah. Thank God, right? Like, I bet you it's a relief for them a little bit, but... And I mean, if everyone's talking about the Leafs now, it's a great thing for them because, you know, what they've been going through, the start that they had, and now what they've been going through, like, I don't wish that on anybody to be stuck in that and to feel that and to have, you know, truly no answers on how to get out of it, right? Like, this is your team. This is what you guys are. This is, you guys have to do this. And, like, and you know, they're getting asked, like, how do you fix this? And, like, they're like, we're trying, you know? And I truly believe that they are. It's just they don't know what to do right now. And it's like, I've been in this. You're, like, in quicksand, man. It's like, you know, the Replacements movie, right? Shane Falco, quicksand talk that he talked about, where you're kind of stuck. You're kind of just stuck in, like, you're deer in a headlights almost. And it appears they're that way. And obviously, you know, they're feeling it. And you can tell with the explosion in you know, after practice, press conferences, and what it's going to, you know, we see kind of the, you know, back and forth and the frustration mounting. And I think it's mounting for everyone in that area. So, yeah, I'm sure they're relieved that maybe dodge it a little bit. Although Brendan Perlini's, I saw his little interview. It did catch some fire. It's just like a sweet glass half full type of attitude.
Yeah, he seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, and he seemed like a nice guy. And you know, maybe that approach for the rest of the guys, instead of like hammering yourself so hard, you know, might get him out of this, might loosen it up a bit. Easier said than done.
Yeah, you hear that, Oilers fans? It's like, you're wasting McDavid's prime, but you got Perlini's happy. It's okay. It's all right.
That's true, buddy.
The Oilers are the only guys in all of Canada who are hoping for more shutdowns. They're like, lock it down again. Yeah. No more hockey games. Let's all
like,
just go.
Postpone all of our games.
Yeah. Josh Sutton wants to get back to Germany ASAP. He wants to get on a flight out of here. He does not want to kick around Edmonton with old Jimmy Matheson any longer. He wants gone.
Oh, they're going to. They're gonna run Leon. No, I saw a mashup. I don't call it. Someone made like the Perlini interview with like his heartfelt little talk, and then at the end they dubbed in Matheson's voice. Like, why are you so pissy? At the end, it was like hilarious.
That's just so funny. Pissy is so great. Last one before you go. This is off. You are a great storyteller, and I can't help but think about it with – so right now, Brad Marchand is on fire. Social media game is off the charts. You want to talk about your Instagram being on fire? Man, you got nothing compared to Brad Marchand.
You're the reason why we put
20% in escrow on the Carolina Hurricanes. It was one of the funniest things. It was one of the funniest things I've ever read. Like, I hate Twitter. That tweet alone made me go, you know what? Maybe Twitter's not so bad. This is the question, though. It's not about Marchand, who is obviously just on a tear right now. Who, in your estimation, was the best chirper when you played?
Oh, good gosh. Good question. Yeah, that's a good question. That's putting me on the spot. I will say, Sean Thornton was pretty vocal in Boston, and he's pretty funny, too. And then he could, like, back it up as well. So it was like he made it even more, like, even better. But he could go pretty good. He was constantly going all game. So I'll give it to him. So maybe there's something there with Marchand and his short time with Thordy and the Bruins back in the day that kind of got him going. I think he's always had that in him, but I got to think, right? Like when he's about to send, like push send on that, like do you think all the boys are around and he's like, guys, check this out.
100%.
On that
one,
buddy, right?
Yeah, that's so funny.
He's been a killer on social media for sure. A star player on the ice too, but really killing comebacks on social media. It's hilarious.
Yeah, no, it's good for the Marchand brand. Again, everybody loves him now.
Yeah,
he's absolutely like your team lost 7-1 or whatever. It didn't matter because you got that escrow line in, and now that's it. That's what everyone's gonna say to the Hurricanes for the rest. Like all guys, that's one where now other teams are gonna play them, and dudes are just gonna yell escrow. And that's going to be it. And, like, that's it. And that's it. And it's the end of it. It's going to get in guys' heads, especially right now with all the pandemic pay.
The best part is it kind of hammers the fans, right? Like, it's like a shot at the fans. So he fired up all of Kane's Nation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Not Kane's Nation. Not, like, all six fans of that pig.
a bunch of jerks.
Yeah, I know. A bunch of jerks. All right, Kobe, this was great, buddy. We'll let you go, and we'll talk soon, pal. See you later.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys. Have a great morning.
Later, buddy. It's Kobe Armstrong, former NHL forward. And, analyst for Sportsnet. Instagram superstar.
They're going to start selling T-shirts that just say escrow.
Yeah.
Boston should just sell those. Just, like, wear them in the crowd. I'd love it. With, the Bruins colors. Mm.
That's one thing I hate about how hockey covers itself is, like, I know that you can't have everybody mic'd up all the time and it would change things a bit, but Sean Thornton has a little compilation on YouTube of him talking trash, and it's hilarious. He's a hilarious guy. But that's it. That's all you can find is a few minutes of bad audio quality throughout this guy's entire career of chirping. And whenever we get these mic'd up things, we get, what was the one we just got from TNT? It was hilarious. I think it was Matthews. Who was it that was mic'd up for that Arizona game? And they show the clips and he goes, good job. Hey, pass the puck.
It must have been Matthews then.
Yeah, it was just so bad. The sport has so many funny guys. They've had 24/7. Still to this day, I say to my friends, go dye your hair, which is a chirp from one of the 24/7s where Matt Martin says it to Drew Miller. He says, you were in the minors longer than me, you dumb bleep. Go dye your hair. And it's just simple, but that's the thing. That the best chirps are the ones that are simple. And that to me is one where just, yeah, go dye your hair. And hockey has just done a piss-poor job, to bring back the word piss, because now the piss is hot in the streets. It's just find a way to showcase that personality element a little bit more. And when you do these mic'd ups, you don't need to have it be aggressive, but just give us a little taste. Give us a little taste of how funny some of these guys are. It should have been that way from his jump. Instead, we get the star players going, good job, buddy. Great.
How are your kids?
Yeah, Zach Hyman. Hope your family's doing well in this trying time. Fun. Let's take a break. Let's talk to Bobby Marks. He's got to call him up about what every team needs heading into the NBA trade deadline. Raptors need probably somebody other than six guys who can play minutes for them. But we'll ask him. We'll ask him who's out there. Bobby Marks, front office insider for ESPN, next on the Fan Morning Show. J.D. Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Fan Morning Show. Of course, that 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, J.D. Bunkus. And joining us, the guy you need to be following and reading right now for these last 3 weeks ahead of the NBA trade deadline. And yes, it's only 3 weeks away. ESPN NBA front office insider, Bobby Marks. Bobby, good morning. How are you, man?
I'm good, guys. Good morning. How are you?
Blake, who do you think would get more frustrated, you or Bobby, by my fake trades that don't work under the salary cap? Like, who do you think gets more frustrated?
Yeah, hey, it's one thing to propose them, but you got to make sure they work, man. Like, yeah. Don't just be throwing out like a $20 million guy for a $2 million guy. Like, you gotta follow the rules here.
Yeah.
I just put a lot of work on Blake's plate. I just put it all over to Blake. I go, Blake, make this work in the trade machine.
That sounds like my former owners in Brooklyn.
This is where the little mistakes in the trade machine, either, you know, at any of the sites you use, like I was doing the work of, hey, one of these trade machines that everyone likes to use erroneously had Gary Trent as untradeable before the deadline. It's like, no, I feel like I'm accidentally consulting on these things. And you being at ESPN, I feel like you end up probably doing the same. And Bobby, yeah. Over at ESPN, you had yesterday, you updated what is, you know, the annual column for people trying to get ready for the trade deadline. It's 2022 NBA trade deadline, what to watch and potential deals for all 30 teams. So people can head over to ESPN or your Twitter at BobbyMarks42 to check out that. I wanted to start off with this. I watched that Philadelphia 76ers last game last night, and Joel Embiid puts up 50 points on 23 shots in 27 minutes. And we obviously know Joel Embiid is a monster. He's, you know, every year you could make a case for him being the MVP, whether it's by counting stats, on-off impact. You know, here in Toronto, we watch just how hard it is to win a playoff series against him, even when he's not at his best. Do you look at a game like that and feel an added sense of urgency as the Philadelphia 76ers where, yeah, maybe you want to wait out this game of chicken with Ben Simmons and you want to make sure you win a trade, but you have a generational talent playing at an MVP level at age 27. He's about to turn 28 before the playoffs start. Like, what is your urgency level to make the most of this Embiid window if you're Philadelphia?
Well, I think there is a sense of urgency just because I think the Eastern Conference is so wide open. And I think if, you know, if they don't make a trade, you know, they're staring at Milwaukee in round one. I mean, that's the reality of it. And I don't think they get out of round one as great as Embiid has been playing here. But then there's the balancing act of kind of the future, right? As far as you do kind of a quick fix or just add two players to the roster here, and maybe it impacts you down the road here. But yeah, I just don't, it's hard for me to think that Philadelphia is going to waste a another MVP type year of Embiid and not provide any help for this, for him. And that's why it, you know, they're going to have to kind of, you know, as far as what they're asking for, you know, probably look at different options here. I mean, there's, as we've talked about, there's not a top 25 guy out there. Like, that's just not, it's not realistic right now here. And that's why I give Denver a lot of credit. Like, I wrote in Denver's, article, well, Jokic is playing, you know, we saw last night, he's playing great. Like, Denver's in a position where you got Jamal Murray was out, Michael Porter Jr. out. I mean, they could basically just punt on the trade deadline just because of where they are from a roster standpoint, but they go out and do kind of like a Bryn Forbes move, you know, under the radar, get some another shooter. They don't give up much. And just a second round pick in the future here. And yeah, I don't think Philly can be, you know, conservative, at the deadline, if, you know, basically kind of drawing a line in the sand, just because of, you will waste a, you know, an MVP year of Embiid. And I don't know how many more of those are down the road, especially when you factor in the health standpoint, and, you know, teams in the Eastern Conference will continue to get better.
So, Bobby, we've heard a lot of, you know, chatter. This is obviously the time of year for this kind of smoke over these next 3 weeks. And we've heard, hey, Philadelphia turned down this offer, or Sacramento wasn't willing to offer this. It does seem like more of the smoke has settled around Philadelphia and Sacramento having, mm-hmm. you know, maybe there's a framework there that eventually both sides come around to. Do you see that as, if Philadelphia does make the Ben Simmons move, that Sacramento is the likeliest destination for him?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the teams, you know, them, Indiana, Cleveland at one point, that I thought we could circle just because of the urgency for, I mean, they had a terrible loss last night against Detroit. I mean, you know, they haven't made the playoffs in, what, 15 to 16 years. They're in fighting just to get into play-in. What they have right now is not good enough here. I mean, they've got the contracts to do it. They've got all their draft picks. I just don't know if there's enough there if De'Aaron Fox is off the table or Tyrese Halliburton's off the table. Even if you wanted to take back, Tobias Harris, and I mean, those two guys are like $70 million combined. Like, I mean, what does Barnes and, Buddy Hield and Davion Mitchell and draft picks, does that do it for you for Philadelphia? I don't think so. So that's the big thing for Sacramento, as far as like, how much are you willing to give up, especially if you're giving up lottery picks, because, the West is only going to get better next year when Kawhi gets back and Paul George gets back, the guys in Denver, certainly. So, man, if it doesn't work out and it's a high risk, you are looking at giving up, you know, a lot of young players for three more years of Ben Simmons.
Yeah, I don't know how the Pacers don't make it work. Pacers just feel like the team at this point where it's like, you got to find a way to get involved in this, and you just got to throw those pieces at the wall and just be blowing up Daryl Morey's phone and going, hey, like, find a way, find a machination, because our whole team's on the table.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Turner, you know, with the injury, with the stress reaction, I don't know. I think the value of him kind of drops a little bit, but then you're looking at, you know, Brogdon can't be traded. You're looking at Sabonis, Caris LeVert, and you've got draft picks and, you know, whatever left is left on your roster here. I think if TJ Warren was healthy, that adds a different element there. But, I mean, that's another team, you know. Like, what does Sabonis do for you in Philadelphia when you put him next to Embiid, or you just kind of figure it out down the road? And it's you're probably, if there ever is a Simmons trade, it's just not going to be one, you know, two teams here. It's probably going to be very complex. There'll probably be three or four teams involved just because there's so many, you know, different pieces that will be moved.
So in terms of Indiana, one of the most interesting things to me in your deadline preview piece at ESPN, which again, everyone should bookmark for the next couple weeks. You said that the pressure more than any individual player, you're interested in what head of basketball operations Kevin Pritchard is going to do, because the Pacers maybe don't have an appetite for a full rebuild, but they obviously don't have a real path to contention. And even though they've hit on a couple nice picks like Sabonis and Turner, and they were able to get LeVert in trade, you know, they're 16 and 29, and they're not particularly close in either direction. how big a player do you see them being over these next 3 weeks? And is you know, with Miles Turner's foot injury, is Caris LeVert suddenly going to be the guy we're talking about most heading into the February 10th deadline?
Yeah, I would be surprised, you know, when the deadline's over that LeVert's still in Indiana. I mean, if you watch, you know, certainly last night in L.A., I mean, what did he have, 22 points in the fourth quarter, I think, in that win here. And you're right. I mean, in the past, you know, with Kevin, they've been able to kind of retool, right? Like, they retool on the fly, which is really hard. You know, the post-Paul George era, you know, you go out and get Thaddeus Young and Bogdanovic, and you kind of stay in that 6-7 range. Now you're 6.5 games out of the 10 seed. And it's not good enough here. And, you know, certainly last night was a good win here, but there's something you have to do with this roster. And either the owner, you know, he's come out and said it. He doesn't have an appetite for like a full rebuild. And so it's going to be another challenge as far as, you know, what do you get back for LeVert? I don't think you can get 2 first-round picks. I think you can get a first-round pick and maybe a young player. Caris has 2 more years left. Sabonis got 3 years left, you know, this year and 2 more. He's the prize of everything here. But I think what you want is you want a pick, and I think you want a young player, and I think you still want to be, somewhat competitive, although you're not a playoff team.
Yeah, to me, if I'm another GM right now, and granted, I'm not watching the Pacers night in, night out, but there's 4 guys on that team that I actually think would be awesome in other spots. Like, if you can get Brogdon somewhere else, I think he's going to be good. If you can get Sabonis somewhere else, my guess is that we're going to look back on a Sabonis trade and say, oh, Indiana did not do well in this deal. Like, this is not good for them. Turner, I don't know how that ends up working out, but same thing with LeVert. Like, these are all 4 pieces that I really like in isolation. And I got to imagine that teams try desperately to pry at least one of them away. And if you're Indiana, you just got to hope that you don't make one of these moves that ends up setting your franchise back, or you make sure you don't get enough assets back. And we've done a lot of it, too. Like, I guess why I focus so much on it is the Raptors have always been part of this, right? There was one rumor about OG and whatever. I don't think the Raptors are players. You have your piece out, and you've outlined basically the 2 pieces that we have. Well, this is what we're talking about right now with the Raps is we go, hey, what are they going to do at the deadline? What are they going to do at the deadline? Right. Are they going to add bench? Are they going to make something splashy? It's like, no, it doesn't seem that way. And you're on top of it, and you have the 2 pieces that we're talking about right now, right? Which is the Goran Dragic contract, because that's all it is right now, and potentially Chris Boucher, who's on an expiring deal and playing pretty good basketball right now. I wonder what you think the market is going to be like for those 2 assets and whether the Raptors would be able to recoup anything of significance.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what you're trying to do. I mean, you look at the game last night. They played 7 guys, but six 28 plus minutes here. So, if you are the goal is to get in, which it should, even if it's a play-in, then what are you trying to what can you turn that Dragic contract into more bench help? I mean, that's probably the big thing. It's hard, I mean, especially when you're 200 and change under, away from the luxury tax here. And I thought he's probably more of a buyout guy. I mean, is there a combination of $16 million in contract? I think, Chris has certainly mentioned just because he's an expiring, he's a free agent. But if you're Toronto, and you're right, he has played pretty good basketball, there's probably still an appetite to bring him back as a as a free agent here. So that's for me as far as the Raptors, as far as those two. The core guys, I would basically put the untouchable tag on them. The 5 guys that were out there last night, and Gary's out also. But it's kind of those trimming around the edges, and it starts with Dragic. And if there's no deal with Dragic come February 10th, then we're probably looking at some type of a buyout, and it gives you a little more money under the tax to go out and sign a guy.
So if we're looking at someone like a Chris Boucher, who's had quite a good stretch here and has been an impact player for the Raptors, but he's obviously someone that you even said could be an option on the trade deadline. Do you think that something like a late projected first is too high for him right now?
I think it's only if that team knows what the market will be for him, because he is a free agent. It's funny, I'm starting to work on free agency in the offseason. I mean, this is not a good group of free agents, and he would be probably in the top 15. Realistically, I mean, outside of the main guys that, the Hardens and Kyrie and Beal and Levine and those guys, but teams are not willing to give up future ones for rentals. I think that's, you know, that's going to be, and there's so many teams that are, have picks that are going everywhere. So that's the big thing. Like, you know, Brooklyn, he'd be good in Brooklyn, but the, you know, the Nets only have a 2028 first. So I don't think that's going to be in play. So I don't think his value is at a first just because he could be a free agent and he could cost you, a lot. But on the other end, there's so many teams that don't have cap space this summer where he could be your main free agent without going out, you know, if you didn't have room to go out and get him.
It's an interesting spot with Boucher and the Raptors because obviously the bird rights hold some value there, right? Like as a sign and trade piece, as a keep them piece, if you strike out elsewhere, if you're the Raptors even, and you're looking ahead to a summer where you're almost definitely going to be an above cap team again, and those bird rights come in handy, that I don't know. You know, I've been asked sometimes, like, hey, would they take a second? And I look, and they got a second for Terrence Davis last year at the deadline, a second for Matt Thomas, maybe a high second, but something in the 40s. I don't know that that's worth more than just the bird rights on Chris Boucher heading into the summer. So that'll be an interesting one to watch. Bobby, before we let you go, is there a name that we here in this conversation, but we as a basketball media in general, haven't really talked about much that you could see, you know, hey, this guy's going to be in a new home 3 weeks from now, even if we're not talking about it yet?
I don't know about a name, but I would really circle Washington to take a look at here. I mean, they're sitting in, you know, they lose last night against Brooklyn. They have not been good after I said that was the greatest trade in NBA history. I think I put the must on them. I think they're 23 and 22. They're sitting in eight. They've got the Beal decision coming up here. What they are right now is, I mean, they're going to lose. They'll lose in the first round here. I'd put a Sabonis, you know, kind of link to them as far as a big deal out there. And I think Tommy Shepard, you know, I don't think their head of basketball ops can sit tight here at the deadline here. I think they're another piece away to try to, you know, get out of the first round, especially with the Beal decision kind of looming over their head down the road.
Sorry, we've got a muted question for you there, Bobby.
I was saying that that's really smart to me. Is if you're Washington trying to take a bunch of those pieces and trying to sell high on like a Kuzma to get in on a Sabonis kind of trade, that to me is something that you really want to be exploring if you're them and try to pair him with a Beal. That could end up working out for you. But I just wanted to say that two things can be true, Bobby. Washington can stink, but that can still be one of the best trades in NBA history. Honest to God.
Let's just ask the Lakers, right? The Lakers would love to have those guys
to
use them in a deal, right? Or keep. I mean, now they are what they are. So, and that's the reality of it.
I can't imagine being someone who voted Russell Westbrook into the greatest 75 players in NBA history right now watching this season. You're like, can I retract my vote? Can we have a do-over on this vote? Because, like, this season is pulling back at least one good Russ year. Like, that's happening 100%. But this, if you're Lakers fans, I keep seeing this, and I know this is a social media thing, so this is like a JD's fake trade thing, but you have Lakers fans going, oh, LeBron the GM, getting ready to trade everybody. What, can the Lakers even trade anybody? Because it sure as hell seems like from the outside that they're stuck with this. This is what it is. Like, there is no move. What are you trading Russell Westbrook for? John Wall? Like, what could you even move him for?
No, and I don't even think Houston would do that deal without Horton Tucker or a future first, which can't be until 27 or 28. I mean, you're looking at moves to move DeAndre Jordan and Kent Bazemore to open up a roster spot. I don't see the value of Horton Tucker and Kendrick Nunn, who hasn't played. You know, they do have that first and 27. So if you're a team, you're looking for unprotected. But this is who they are. I mean, when you did that Westbrook trade, this is the reality of the situation, and I have news for Laker fans. Like, it ain't going to get much better next year. Like, I mean, Russell Westbrook's got a $47 million contract that he's going to opt in. You know, I mean, maybe when AD gets back from his injury, they do get better, but we'll see. I mean, real quick, I mean, GM playbook 101 is always – the coach is always going to get fired. I mean, that's the reality of it, because the front office never thinks it's the players they picked is the problem, and we'll see what happens with Frank Vogel there.
Bobby Marks, ESPN NBA front office insider, at Bobby Marks 42, a must follow these next 3 weeks and always. And then your fifth annual NBA trade guide, available at ESPN.com. Thanks so much for taking the time, and enjoy these next couple weeks of chaos.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Blake, I know you love Russell Westbrook, and history has proven me to be the victor, and it's okay. It's fine. You were wrong. I was right about Russ. No, it's okay. Is that, no, Blake, just let me lie.
There's a difference between liking 27-year-old, 28-year-old Russ. And,
I know. I just and, I love it. You know I like to frame now. Things for me. Yeah. You like. You know I like to frame my ways and my
really, I had no idea.
My favorite two outcomes here, obviously outcome number one is that would be the most hilarious NBA thing is, you know, Russell Westbrook ends up on the Knicks next season in an offseason deal. But my second favorite one is Russ and John Wall getting traded for each other again, but the values have switched, so the picks going in the other direction
that's
instead.
Hilarious.
Whereas
that's better.
Initially,
that's better than
John,
the next thing.
John Wall had a first attached to him for Russell Westbrook, and now you'll do it the other way, even though John Wall has. But John Wall's value has somehow gone up by not playing, whereas Russell Westbrook's has gone down by playing.
Yeah. Okay, so this is. I'm sorry, but this is going to be tied in the Russell Westbrook legacy. He's now part of two of the worst trades ever. The Houston trade, where you traded Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook alone, is genuinely, like, imagine that. Today's day and age. Imagine right now the Lakers were presented with the idea they could trade Russell Westbrook for Chris Paul. Just straight up. What that would mean for basketball. But that not only did you trade away Chris Paul, you gave up draft picks in order to acquire Russell Westbrook for Chris Paul. That happened. And then not only that, you go, hey, this isn't actually going to be the worst of the two trades in Russell Westbrook's tenure here over the next 2 years. Like, genuinely, Russell Westbrook's legacy, triple doubles, and two of the worst trades in NBA history.
Four firsts and Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook. And, like, some of those had protections and swaps and stuff like
Who
that.
Cares?
So maybe, you know, maybe it doesn't end up being four, but wild. And then John Wall in a first for Russell Westbrook. And then, you know, Kuzma, Montrezl Harrell, KCP, that was obviously a much bigger trade, but
yeah,
man, Westbrook's hit list of guys I got traded for is going to be amazing. And like, he's been traded for so many first round picks at this point that like half the league at one point is going to be, oh yeah, I got traded for Russell Westbrook too. It's going to be like that old when the Raptors got off of, when they did the like 4-team double sign and trade to get Hedo Turkoglu in, and they sent out Sean Marion, and Marion had been attached to Jermaine O'Neal. Yeah. We're gonna have like a bunch of that trickle out from Chris Paul, John Wall, Russell Westbrook all being traded for each other at different times. That's
amazing.
Gonna be a blast. Also a blast, hopefully, tomorrow. JD, you got the aux cord.
I totally forgot.
Well, it's someone keeps changing the font level and the big highlights in the doc. So JD, Ailish is trying to make sure you don't forget.
Hey, guess what? I'm just going to play that whole new Vince Staple, or sorry,
Earl Sweatshirt.
Earl Sweatshirt album. Like, that's going to be the only thing I do tomorrow. So, congrats.
There will be no argument here.
Yeah. It's really good. All right. Well, I guess catch that tomorrow. Catch my old aux cord. And yeah, follow me on Instagram. I'm dropping another take it or leave it today.
All right. You do that. It's at JD Bunkus, by the way. She's at Ailish Morfar. We're at Fan590, and please subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Just the Fan Morning Show. We'll talk to you tomorrow, our regular Friday crew, setting up the weekend, setting up both NFL and UFC. And then, of course, we'll talk about your Raptors and your Leafs. That's tomorrow. This has been the Fan Morning Show. Have a great day. Sports at 590 The Fan.